So our reading this morning is by the Black American writer Margaret Wheatley. There is no greater power than a community discovering what it cares about. Ask what is possible, not what's wrong. Keep asking. Notice what you care about. Assume that many others share your dreams. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Talk to people you know. Talk to people you don't know. Talk to people you never talk to. Be intrigued by the differences you hear. Expect to be surprised. Treasure more curiosity than certainty. Invite in everybody who cares to work on what is possible. Acknowledge that everyone is an expert about something. Know that creative solutions come from new connections. Remember, you don't fear people whose stories that you know. Real listening always brings people closer together. Trust that meaningful conversation can change your world. Rely on human goodness. Stay together. So once there were three bricklayers, and they were asked what they were doing. And the first one said, rather grumpily, "I'm laying bricks." The second one said, "I'm building a wall." And the third one said, enthusiastically and with pride, "I am building a cathedral." That's vision. Our theme this month is vision, and that's vision. Always knowing what you are building. And knowing that each act you perform, each trowel full of mud you throw onto a brick, each dish you wash, each song you sing, each smile you give, each stranger you welcome, each meeting you attend, each protest you go to, makes that vision real. The question we're going to ask ourselves this morning, though, is how do we know what our vision is? There's so much to do and be in this world. And how do we know collectively and individually what our vision is for our lives and for the world? We ask these questions as human beings. We all do. Who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Who am I accountable to? Who do I belong to? And why does it matter? Our consumer culture has some answers for these questions. Make money and enjoy as many things and experiences as you can, and do it because you'll be happy and it will bring you pleasure, and be accountable to yourself. Our families and communities have answers to those questions. Go to college, or go into the military, or stay close to home, or go into the family business, or be straight, or be married, or have children, or give back to the community. And they say, be accountable to us. Religious faiths have long been in the business of casting visions. The Gospels, the stories of Jesus' life, are stories from one faith about what matters, what makes life worth living, and how we should orient our lives in order to flourish. And while Christianity pulled itself from its fractionist beginnings enough to choose the books of the Bible, just 200 years after Jesus' death, it is now shattered again into factions, divided on these big questions, particularly on their various visions of how we live good and meaningful lives that matter. They agree on this, though. You are accountable to God. Unitarian Universalists are one of those factions of Christianity that got thrown so far out that we no longer even claim that designation. However, we are no different from other faiths. We have a vision about the world as it should be and what values we should build on. Those are our principles. Put succinctly, We envision a just and kind world where all people and the existence, the web of existence can all flourish. And we believe we are accountable to each other and to something greater than ourselves. Parker Palmer, a white American Quaker, wrote the book Let Your Life Speak, a classic text on finding vocation. And knowing your vocation, whether that's your career or how you choose to spend your time volunteering or being ministering to the world, is one form of life vision. He says most of us have visions of our lives, particularly when we are young, based on our community's expectations of us. Ultimately, though, those visions are exoskeletons, and while helpful at times, don't necessarily conform to a person's true nature. He says each of us arrives here with a nature, which means both limits and potentials. There are things we like, and there are things we don't like, things we are good at and not good at. We have particular ways of perceiving or managing discomfort or conflict. This true nature, our central being, Palmer would call our soul. Since all of us are immersed in the expectations of the world around us, how do we uncover these visions of a life that is true to who we are? The answer to that question is discernment. To discern means to judge well. It means to carefully consider, to pay attention, to listen deeply, and make wise, fully considered decisions. The idea of discernment and the practice of discernment comes to Unitarian Universalism through our Christian roots. In Christianity, discernment means listening to the voice and the will of God. What does God want in this moment? What is God calling me or us to do? One does not have to be Christian or believe in God or a God that speaks, however, to find the usefulness in the way some Christians, particularly Quakers and Jesuits, think about discernment. These practices are old, and they come through centuries tested and tried by good people trying to make good decisions about their lives and their communities. Parker Palmer titled his book, Let Your Life Speak, from a quote from the Quaker tradition. Individuals can find a vision for their lives, according to Palmer, by attending to the ways that their life speaks to them. Before you tell your life what you intend to do with it, says Palmer, listen for what it intends to do with you. Before you tell your life what truths and values you have decided to live up to, let your life tell you what truths you embody, what values you represent. When have doors closed in your life? When have they opened? When do you feel amazing joy? When have you entered into the darkness of depression and exhaustion? What things can you not stop doing? This listening to your life speak, listening to your soul, says Palmer, must be done in a reverent way, quietly, patiently, with deep, deep attention, in meditation or in prayer. In our culture, Palmer says, we tend to gather information in ways that do not work very well when the source is the human soul. The soul is not responsive to subpoenas or cross-examinations. At best, it will stand in the dock only long enough to plead the Fifth Amendment. At worst, it will jump bail and never be heard of again. The soul speaks its truth only under quiet, inviting, and trustworthy conditions. The soul is like a wild animal, continues Parker, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. If we want to see a wild animal, the last thing we would do is go crashing through the woods, shouting for the creature to come out. But if we are willing to walk quietly into the woods and sit silently for an hour or two at the base of a tree, the creature we are waiting for may well emerge, and out of the corner of an eye we'll catch a glimpse of the precious wildness we seek. This is discernment. This is listening to the soul. It is listening to the still, small voice within. The still, small voice within is described vividly in the Hebrew Bible. Previous to this point in the story of the Hebrews' relationship to their God, God had always been a force outside in the world. Then things change. This is from 1 Kings, verse 19. Then he said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by. And a great strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks into pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after a wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice." So it was, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" The still, small voice, "What are you doing here, and where are you going?" It doesn't matter whether you believe the still small voice is the voice of God, or the intricate way our brain brings together information and codes it with emotions and tugs us in particular directions. It doesn't matter how you explain the still small voice. What matters is listening to it. There are many ways to listen. Ignatius, founder of the Jesuits, 500 years ago said that when you want to make a decision, contemplate the pros and cons of your choice. But after carefully considering those, listen to how you feel. Does one decision make you feel more peaceful? Does one make you feel more uncomfortable, distressed, or even give you indigestion? Pay attention, he said. Sometimes these feelings are quite subtle. Remember, the soul is shy. Feeling more peaceful was, of course, and is, the path that would bring you closer to God and the right choice. Interestingly, 500 years later, neuroscientists have discovered that decision-making really is in the realm of feeling in your brain. We code possibilities with emotions. For example, we must choose a box of cereal at the grocery store. Reason plays a role in that choice. For example, we can scan, thinking consciously or perhaps unconsciously, pro, delicious, con, too much sugar. Con, tastes terrible, pro, good for you. Pro, delicious, con, too expensive. At the end, after all these reasoned examinations of the cereal boxes, it is your emotion that will pull you in a particular direction and toward the particular box of cereal that you will choose. In my life, cereal selection works like this. I scan, too much sugar, too expensive. And since I know that my body actually feels bad if I eat too much sugar, and my bank account feels empty if I pay too much, I code all those cereals with negative emotions, and I buy steel-cut oats. But then there is the evening that I walk into the grocery store tired and hungry and after a bad day, and that box of life cereal begins flashing bright, comfort, 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 and it simply overrides all the bad feelings about sugar expense, and it lands in my cart. David Brooks, a white American, in his book, A Social Animal, puts it this way. Reason and emotion are not separate and opposed. Reason is nestled upon emotion and dependent upon it. I love that. Reason is nestled upon emotion and dependent upon it. Emotion assigns value to things, and reason can only make choices based on the basis of those valuations. The human mind can be pragmatic because it is romantic. Of course, emotions can lead us astray and value things that sometimes aren't the best. You could say my tiredness and vulnerability coated the box of life cereal with an emotion signaling comfort. However, my actual still small voice might have counseled differently if I could have heard it at all. And perhaps I did. I think it might have said something about going home and eating bowl after bowl of life cereal is going to make you feel terrible. I, however, ignored it. So all sorts of things can get in the way of listening to that still, small, shy voice of our soul. Some of the things that can get in the way, Palmer mentions, are your ego. Your need to look good. Your need to be right. Your fears of worthlessness and failure. Your stories about how life works, past bad or positive experiences. The Quakers suggest a clearness committee when one cannot hear that still small voice. A person gathers people they trust, they put forward a decision they are struggling with, and share their thoughts and feelings about it. The people in the circle do not give advice or guide the person in any particular direction. Their only role is to ask open-ended questions so that the person can speak and finally clear away all the chatter of the egos and the fears and the tiredness and whatever's in the way and hear that still small voice. We often can hear our still small voice when we are heard by others. That's why I love chalice circles. I'll just have you say. So when this voice speaks, when the voice does speak, the person can hear the answer, and what they feel is peace. This year, WOOF is embarking upon a year of discernment. If you have read some emails and letters and gotten some phone calls, you may know this. And I know for some of you that this might feel unnecessary. WOOF has, in fact, a strong, good mission statement that it created not long ago. Together we plant the seeds of inspiration. We grow in compassionate community, and we bloom in service to the wider world. And WOOF is also living out this mission with varied worship services that inspire people who are engaged in small groups and chalice circles are growing in compassionate community. And the congregation is blooming through social justice programs in service to the wider world. And I'll just put a plug in for we're talking about race downstairs after with soup, which is one way we're living out that mission. So while all of this is true, the congregation still needs to make some decisions that require holding up a vision for the future. Do we have this vision or that one? Where are we going? Who are we? For many, many years, this congregation was lay-led, but then after a time of careful, thoughtful discernment, the congregation decided to have a professional minister, and it has grown that ministry from one-quarter time to three-quarters time. And now there is another important decision about professional ministry. Does this congregation want to contract with a minister, i.e. having a minister that works year to year at the will of the board? Or does the congregation want to call a minister, meaning the whole congregation votes and is to enter into a long-term relationship with that minister? It is a heartfelt coming together of a professional minister and a congregation. That is a big step, moving from contract to call. And it is worth taking time and reflecting on what it means to share the ministry of the congregation with a professional minister, and to contemplate the questions of authority and power that might naturally arise as you consider a different kind of relationship with a minister. And this is not the only question before you. After 25 years with Wolf, a beloved director of religious education, retired. And you will now be hiring a new director of religious education. This is a time when the needs of our families and children are very different than they were 50 years ago, 25 years ago, or 15 years ago. And this means that Wolf needs to ask itself some real fundamental questions, like, why do we do religious education? What is its purpose? What do we want for children and families? What do we want our children and families to know and experience? How does it matter that someone is raised Unitarian Universalist? You need to hire a DRE with some knowledge of what you want that DRE to be, what you want RE to be, and how the congregation wants to share this ministry with this new professional. How will the congregation as a whole be involved in this important project of caring for our children and our families? These decisions deserve the thoughtfulness of discernment. They will affect the congregation for a long time. They will affect the way the congregation feels on a daily basis and how the congregation will make a path into the future. So how does one discern? Through the speaking of many souls, a communal vision of the future. Considering how challenging it is to listen to your own life, and then consider how difficult it might want to be when a community is looking at its own life and trying to discern the way forward. That is a lot of still small voices to listen to. And those are many souls that need to be coaxed out of their hiding places. And that is a lot of still small voices speaking truth, often multiple contradicting truths. So how does one discern? And the answer to that question is together. You discern together. In the story this morning, we heard how wisdom fell and scattered, so everyone got a bit of it. This type of story, the scattering of wisdom among the people, is common in world folklore. We have known past the beginning of time, past human memory, that people need each other's perspectives in order to be wise. At the same time, neuroscience is learning how we are not really individual selves, like we think we are. But as the Vietnamese Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh says, we are interbeings. Our neurons mirror each other, literally bringing another person's actions and emotions into ourselves. And we act them out in our brains as if we were doing the same actions and experiencing the same emotions. This is how we come to have empathy. It's also how we learn how to be in the world. Infants actually grow half of their brains in relationship with their parents and the people around them, because their interbeing, that other person, is creating their brains. So when people come together to discern, we become still and first try to listen to our own small voice. We pay attention. We are hearing our own still small voice. Are we? We ask ourselves these questions. Are we hearing our own still small voice, or is it our ego, or our need to be right, or our need to win? We need to be very careful when we speak about what part of us is speaking. We also need to listen carefully and pay attention to other people's feelings and perspectives. As we do, we become each other. We understand one another. As others express excitement or joy or worry or concern, we shift our emotional valuation to different options. So those boxes of cereal somewhat change for us and how we feel about them. Being heard also allows us to most clearly hear our own still small voice. We need to be in relationship. This is a different type of experience than voting or writing down our point of view and sending it in, and then they're all sort of collated, who has most perspectives and who has less of that perspective. Or setting up a situation where there's different options and everybody argues about them, sometimes just by making their voice louder. You might have been in those conversations. So when we discern as a group, we open up and we listen to ourselves and others until at some point our small, still voices are talking and listening to one another. Margaret Wheatley's words this morning are so helpful to us in this process. There is no power greater than a community discovering what it cares about. Ask what's possible, not what's wrong. Keep asking. Notice what you care about, that still small voice. Assume that many others share your dreams. Be brave enough to start a conversation about what matters. Talk to people you know. Talk to people you don't know. Talk to people you never talk to. Be intrigued by the differences you hear. Not challenged, intrigued. And expect to be surprised. Treasure curiosity more than certainty. Invite in everybody who cares to work on what's possible. Acknowledge that everyone is an expert about something. Know that creative solutions come from new connections. Remember, you don't fear people whose stories you know. Real listening brings people closer together. Trust that meaningful conversations can change the world. Rely on human goodness. Stay together. And eventually will come that feeling of peace, and we know our vision together, where we are going, and what we will do next. I have closing words by the white American UU minister, Norman Vailer. Reminded that we are part and participants of the universe, let us go forth from this quiet hour, encouraged to strive toward faithfulness in the best in ourselves, in others, and in the whole of creation.